This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
We will fight and take the war to them in Somalia, because even in Somalia, Kenya is an anchor state. It has a moral responsibility to bring peace and security along the countries of the Horn of Africa.
That was Kenyan Defense Minister Aden Duale on the latest attack attributed to Somali-based extremist group Al-Shabaab. Also, International Criminal Court says a probe has been opened into alleged war crimes in Sudan. And South Africa's former president Jacob Zuma is in Russia, reportedly for medical treatment. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Kenyan authorities say suspected Al-Shabaab militants have killed two police officers and a teacher in Kenya's northeast. Ahmed Hussein reports from Wajir County, Kenya.
Security officials in Kenya say two police officers and a teacher were killed early Friday morning when Al-Shabaab militants attacked the Wargudut police camp in the Mandera South area of northeastern Kenya. The militants also carjacked a police vehicle and destroyed two communications towers. Security officials declined VOA's request for a comment. However, Mandera South Member of Parliament Abdul Haro confirmed the Friday morning incident.
I can confirm last night there was a terror attack in my constituency, the place called Wargadut, and there is some casualties. Also, there was another attack on a few kilometers away from Wargadut in a place called Ngeshiki. And then, of course, there was also a probing attack KDF based in Elwa.
The incident took place as Kenya's Defense Secretary Aden Duale is touring the northeastern region to meet security officials and residents. Addressing residents in the border town of Diff in Kenya's Wajir County, Duale said Kenya will fight militants within and outside Kenya to secure its territory.
We will fight Al-Shabaab along our borders. We will fight and take the war to them in Somalia, because even in Somalia, Kenya is an anchor state. It has a moral responsibility to bring peace and security along the countries of the Horn of Africa.
Last week, Kenyan security forces killed 23 suspected Al-Shabaab militants during an ambush at the Orgene area in Kenya's Mandera County. The encounter also left 6 Kenyan soldiers dead and 8 others injured. Duale said Kenya will use all possible means to flush terrorists and their sympathizers from the region.
I am talking to the leadership of Al-Shabaab, wherever they are. Prepare yourself. We will use our land forces. We will use our air force. We will use our navy. We will use our special forces to hunt you down.
Kenya announced plans earlier this year to reopen its border with Somalia that has been closed for over a decade, but has now suspended those plans following increased attacks by the militant group. The Islamist militant group has in the past carried out a spate of attacks in Kenyan cities and towns, in an attempt to drive Kenya to withdraw its troops from African Union-led peacekeeping forces in Somalia. Ahmed Hussein for VOA News, Wajir, Kenya.
Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan of the International Criminal Court says a new probe has been opened into alleged war crimes in Sudan. Allegations of atrocities have mounted during the recent fighting, with the top UN official in Sudan calling for the warring sides to face accountability. According to the French news agency AFP, around 3,000 people have been killed and 3 million displaced since violence erupted between Sudan Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his former deputy Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo's Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, paramilitary group. The UN has warned of possible new massacres in Darfur, saying Thursday that the bodies of at least 87 people allegedly killed last month by the RSF and its allies had been buried in a mass grave in Darfur. The U.S. State Department welcomed the new probe. Spokesperson Matthew Miller in a statement said, "Let this be a message to all who commit atrocities in Sudan and elsewhere that such crimes are an affront to humanity." It's still on Sudan. Sudan's capital, Khartoum, experienced a communications blackout for several hours today as the army and the paramilitary forces wage intense battles across Khartoum. Residents told the French news agency AFP that internet and mobile phone connections were out of service as violent clashes raged in several parts of the capital. The source of the outages was not clear, and some mobile networks were restored by midday. Also yesterday, a summit of African leaders from Sudan's neighbors urged an end to the fighting, as UN experts reported a mass grave had been discovered in the country's Darfur region. The summit also called on both parties to secure corridors for urgently needed aid. At a UN Security Council meeting last month, speakers urged member states to do more to counter the security threat posed by climate change. Meanwhile, in Chad, conflicts between farmers and herders from the Fulani ethnic group are flaring as warming temperatures further reduce already scarce water and unusable land. Henry Wilkins reports from N'Djamena, Chad.
In the countryside outside Chad's capital, N'Djamena, farmers and herders say they have noticed the weather change in recent years. It's becoming more difficult to farm with less rainfall and hotter temperatures. The UN says usable land for farmers and herders is diminishing, a situation that intensifies conflict between the groups. Farmers like Abdul Aziz Mohammed says it has become necessary to build nearly 2 meter high fences to protect his crops from cattle.
I'm a problem.
He says they built the fences to stop thieves and idling animals from entering the farm, particularly idling cattle. He adds that the cattle herders are sometimes armed with knives and other weapons. Experts say that herder and farmer disputes made worse by climate change have been linked to much of the insecurity in the Sahel in recent years. Yet many on both sides seem unaware of the effects climate change is having on their lives and instead look to God for solutions. He says they don't know what's causing the problems with the weather, but they definitely need rain. He says the community prays to God every day and asks him for water. That's all they can do. In recent years, the UN Security Council has begun to discuss how it can address climate change in the context of promoting stability. Janani Vivekananda, head of Programme for Climate Diplomacy and Security at Adelphi, a Berlin-based consultancy, points out the Council has yet to adopt a resolution outlining how it will deal with the problem. Recently, the Malian government asked the UN peacekeeping mission there to leave after it failed to reduce violence believed to be caused in part by global warming.
I think Mali is unfortunately an excellent example of how peacekeeping and stabilization forces has just not been fit for purpose, because the ways in which climate change affect the conflict, understanding those root causes of the conflict, climate change has been undermining already stressed livelihoods.
Experts say insecurity caused by climate change and fights over resources like water and land are likely to get worse. Florian Kramp is with the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute.
We have a very clear picture that a lot of security-related dynamics like riots, communal violence, are linked to the impacts of climate change. They are part of the story.
He went on to add, this is a today problem, and it's a problem that's going to be increasingly severe. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, N'Djamena, Chad.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. And a reminder, VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is plus 1202-258-3076, and thanks for 60 years of support. South Africa's former president Jacob Zuma is in Russia, reportedly for medical treatment. His spokesperson, Mwanele Manyi, today confirmed to South African news media that the 81-year-old Zuma went to Moscow last week and will return when his treatment is done. Yesterday, the Constitutional Court upheld a court ruling that Zuma should return to prison to complete a 15-month sentence for contempt of court. Prison authorities said they were studying the judgment and would seek legal advice on how to proceed. Zuma served as president from 2009 to 2018. His African National Congress Party forced him out over graft scandals. He was sentenced in June 2021 after refusing to testify before a panel probing allegations of graft under his tenure. He was then freed on medical parole just 2 months into his sentence. The former head of state last week attended a conference in Zimbabwe. The body of Democratic Republic of Congo opposition deputy was found riddled with bullets in the capital Kinshasa yesterday. Cherubin Okende was a former transport minister and a member of the party of Moise Katumbi, a leading opposition politician who is set to contest the presidential election in December. An official in Katumbi's team told the French news agency AFP that the 61-year-old Okende disappeared Wednesday. His body was found in his car on one of the city's main thoroughfares. A government spokesperson tweeted that the government was shocked to learn of the assassination and that it had ordered a probe. Tunisia's Ons Jabeur believes the lessons she learned in two Grand Slam final defeats will stand her in good stead for tomorrow's Wimbledon showdown with unseeded Czech Markéta Vondrousova. Jabeur showed incredible endurance yesterday to absorb the brutal power of second seed Arina Sabalenka to win the semifinal battle.
Last year was my first final of a Grand Slam, so definitely getting closer to winning the Grand Slam that I always wished, you know. I would say I always believe, but, you know, sometimes you would question and doubt it if it's going to happen, if it's ever going to happen. And being in the last stages, I think it does help you believe more. And for me, I'm going to learn a lot from not only Wimbledon's final, but also US Open final, and give it my best. And maybe this year was all about trying two times and getting it right the third time. So let's see.
Jabeur has a huge following in her home nation, where she's affectionately known as the Minister of Happiness.
Well, the good thing about those people, they always tell me, win or lose, we love you. And that's a great words to hear. I always try to remember that, even though I know everybody wants me to to win. They're funny because a few fans are texting my mental coach, giving her advice of how to coach me. So I'm sure they texted Isam too and Karim. So for me, there is one goal. I'm going for it. I will prepare 100%. And hopefully, you know, I can make history, not just for Tunisia, but for Africa.
She is now back in a position she found herself in at last year's Wimbledon and US Open, requiring one win to win the first African woman, or rather to become the first African woman as well as first Arab to win a major. After years of failed talks, Ethiopia and Egypt said Thursday they aim to finalize within 4 months an agreement on operations of Africa's largest dam, an apparent breakthrough in a dispute that Cairo has described as an existential threat. The Associated Press reported that a joint statement on expedited negotiations issued by Ethiopia's government came after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed discussed the hydroelectric dam with Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi on the sidelines of a regional meeting in Cairo, which was discussing the conflict in neighboring Sudan. Sudan is a third party to the talks regarding the 4.6 billion Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on Ethiopia's stretch of the Blue Nile, just 10 kilometers or 6 miles from the Sudanese border. Egypt depends on the Nile to supply its booming population of 100 million with fresh water. Ethiopia says the dam helps to pull millions of its 110 million citizens out of poverty. Tensions rose as Ethiopia began to fill the dam's reservoir annually in the past few years. The new statement does not describe the foreseen agreement as a legally binding one, which Egypt and Sudan have sought. It also doesn't say whether the talks will be under the auspices of the African Union, which Ethiopia has preferred. In a separate statement, the president of the African Union Commission, Musa Faki Mohamed, commended the Ethiopian Egyptian leaders for their joint decision to reinitiate negotiations on the dam.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
A new report urges governments in East Africa to develop the second-hand clothing market to foster innovation and competition in the textile industry. The report, which was commissioned by the Mitumba Consortium Association of Kenya, focuses on the second-hand clothing industry in the East African community. It came as trade ministers met in Nairobi this week for the 54th All-Africa Trade Ministers Meeting of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Local textile manufacturers have often complained that importing the clothing, also known locally as Mitumba, has a negative impact on textile production in the region. Professor Patrick Diamond of Queen Mary University in England is the author of the report. He told VOA's Jackson Vuganyi that any restrictions on secondhand clothes will do little to address issues affecting the local textile industry and would likely violate trade agreements, particularly with the World Trade Organization and the United States.
Patrick, let's talk about this report that you wrote about Mitumba, which is also secondhand clothing in Kenya. Make the case for us. Why is the secondhand clothing sector or industry fundamental to the economic and social future of the East African community?
Well, I think in terms of today, the world we are in today, it's so important because of jobs. The secondhand clothing sector, Mitumba trade, is creating and has created thousands of jobs, and it has the potential to create even more in the future. Jobs of many different kinds, jobs in the marketplaces, jobs in warehouses, jobs in distribution of the goods, jobs in terms of running retail spaces, an enormous number of jobs. And in a world where after COVID, with all of the economic pressures we're facing, this is a source of new jobs, and this is very important. But I would say that also in terms of the world of tomorrow, the reason why Mitumba and secondhand clothes are so important is because they will help us to build a more sustainable economy. The world is making too many things. We're making too much stuff. And actually producing new clothes is incredibly costly for the environment. It leads to the emission of greenhouse gases. It creates new climate change pressures. So if we can reuse clothing, which is becoming more and more fashionable in the West, then we can cut down on climate emissions and help to build a more sustainable green economy, not just in the West, but throughout the world, including in East Africa.
Mm. You're also making the case that textile import of Chinese clothing constitute a bigger threat to the East African textile manufacturing sector, more so than the secondhand clothes that are imported from the West. How so?
Yeah, so we argue in the report that if we were to ban secondhand clothing, one of the unintended consequences would be to lead to a big rise in the importation of goods from low cost Asian producers like China. Not just China, I mean, there are many other countries that are importing very cheap textiles. So it wouldn't have the effect of reviving the domestic textile sector. That's the point that we're making. And the reason is because the domestic textile sector is weak, not because of secondhand clothes. It's weak because there hasn't been much capacity in these industries for a long time. There's a lack of skills. There's a lack of capital investment. And getting from where we are now to having a stronger domestic textile sector will take 10 to 15 years. So if you were just to ban secondhand clothing tomorrow, the likely effect is you would lead to a flood of low-cost, low-value textile products coming into countries like Kenya from the Chinese market. And I think this would be detrimental to the welfare of Kenyan citizens.
What do you say to the argument made by some in Kenya or in Africa, really, in general, who said that this mitumba, the secondhand clothes, stifles the local textile industry?
Yeah, this is an argument that's been made. But if you look at the experience of countries around the world, there's very little evidence that secondhand clothing is what is stifling domestic textile production. I mean, there's no doubt that the domestic textile sector is weaker in a lot of African countries than we would like it to be. But that is due to other factors, like the ones I've mentioned in terms of investment, lack of skills, the failure to develop that sector in the long term. If government wants a strong domestic textile sector, what it needs to do is not ban secondhand clothing, but have a strong industrial policy that supports the development of domestic textile industries. And that means a long-term commitment from government. So don't believe that just banning secondhand clothing is going to get you a revived domestic textile sector. It isn't. What you need to do is have, as I say, a strong industrial policy that addresses the different factors that you need in order to lead to a resurgence of domestic textile manufacturing. And we very much argue in the report that the two sectors can work together. Like, secondhand clothing does not see domestic textile production as the enemy. The two should be working together. And going back to the environmental point I was making, I think there are going to be many opportunities in the future to recycle clothing in new ways. And if we can recycle clothing, this will create new opportunities for secondhand clothing producers and new domestic textile producers to work together. And I think this has very exciting potential.
And how would banning the secondhand clothing or the mitumba impact the local economy?
Well, the immediate impact would be on jobs. So there's no doubt that if you banned mitumba tomorrow, you would lead to a very sharp rise in unemployment, because you would be cutting off the goods that enable market traders and others to undertake this trade in mitumba. I think then in the longer term, it would lead to lower growth, it would lead to lower government revenues, it would have a detrimental impact across the economy. But I think the immediate impact, which you would see almost immediately in Kenyan society, would be that you would have a sharp rise in unemployment, and it would particularly affect women. I would say it would also affect young people, who are often the beneficiaries of the mitumba trade. So that would certainly be the immediate economic impact.
That's Professor Patrick Diamond of Queen Mary University in England, the author of a report on the secondhand clothing industry in the East African community. He was speaking with VOA's Jackson Vuganyi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabro, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.